Hi, everybody. We're going to get started. So thanks for coming to this session. Today, we're going to talk about building successful big data infrastructure using Azure HD Insight. My name is Rishim Gupta. I'm a principal program manager in the big data team, and I've been here for about 4 years. So I've worked with different big data technologies over the years. So before we start, can we do a quick survey? How many of you use Hadoop today? I only see about 3 or 4 hands. And do you use Hadoop in production? Of the hands that went up, how many in production? OK, so a couple. And do you use HD Insight? One. OK, so this is a 300 session, but I'm going to build up from a bunch of, you know, given that very few people know Hadoop. So you will see more advanced stuff later in the presentation, but I'm going to start from the basics. So let's talk about what the goal is. So the session objectives today, we will learn about the different scenarios of Hadoop. Some of the common questions I get from customers all the time is, why should we even care about Hadoop? Why should we even use Hadoop? So we'll discuss that. If people who are coming from relational also want to understand how they can get started. It's not very easy to get started on Hadoop. We'll talk about why that is and what are the tools like Azure has to make that easy for you. We're also going to talk about some new stuff that just came out. We just released yesterday a new cluster type. And there's a big blog about it. So it's called Interactive Hive that uses LLAP, Long Live in Process, which is a new Interactive Hive technology that just came out. So we'll talk about that and how that compares with other in-memory big data technologies like Spark. My takeaways today for you is, after the end of the session, you should know how Azure makes it very easy to do big data, and also what are the different scenarios and how they fit in. And I think lastly, you should be able to go write a simple end-to-end pipeline at the end of this session once you leave. All right, so let's start by talking a little bit about big data versus traditional data warehouse. So there are two approaches to doing information management for analytics. There's a top-down approach and a bottom-up approach. The top-down approach is more deductive. This is where you have a theory, you come up with a hypothesis, and you build an observation around it, and then you confirm whether that was correct or not. So that's a more top-down approach, where you build your information after you've decided what you're going to test. The other approach is bottom-up. In the bottom-up approach, you actually do an observation. So you observe some behavior, and then you find some patterns from it. And then you build a hypothesis, and then you confirm your hypothesis. So that's the other way around, where you don't know the questions you're asking at the start, but you just collect most of the data and then you start making some sense out of it. So data warehousing uses the top-down approach. To build a data warehouse, you have to start by understanding what the high-level strategy of the question you're trying to ask. You gather your requirements, and then you implement your data warehouse by building reporting tools, dimensions in modeling, ETL, and things like that, right? So it's more top-down. That's what data warehousing is. And the data lake uses a bottom-up approach. When you are building a data lake, and when I say data lake, I mean Hadoop. Most of the big data technologies are data lake. You just collect all the you collect all the unstructured data, semi-structured data. You don't know what it has. You just collect it all in cheap cloud storage, and then you run your pattern analysis on them to understand some questions that you can, at a high level, answer. So we believe, should you use data lake or data warehouse? We believe you should use both. In today's world, there's a lot of relational data that you have. There's also a lot of non-relational data you have, and you should be using both in combination with each other. Data lake can help you answer questions from your past, and data lake can help you build hypotheses from future based on historic questions. So that's where data lake and data warehouse fit. Okay, that was a good intro on what data lake is. Now we're going to talk a little bit about HD Insight. So if you look at the Hadoop stack on Azure, there are different ways of using Hadoop. So on the left side, on my left, you have what we call using Hadoop on infrastructure as a service, where you can go deploy any of these vendors, MapR, Cloudera, Hortonworks, Bits, from the Azure marketplace. And you run them on our VMs, right, on the Azure VMs. So in this particular case, you're actually getting support from Microsoft for the VMs, not for the Hadoop bits, right? You're still responsible for choosing, firstly, which vendor, deploying those bits, upgrading them, managing your cluster. Almost everything related to Hadoop, you're responsible to do it yourself. If a new version comes, you have to figure out how to upgrade. You have to make sure it's tested well with Azure, right? So the easier approach, which is on the right side, is Azure HD Insight, which is a managed service. And I'm going to talk a little bit more in the next slide. But it's a managed Hadoop service in which you just come to us and say, I want to install Hadoop bits. And you press a button. We have a partnership with Hortonworks where we get their bits, we certify those on Azure, and we deploy those for you. So it's very easy from your perspective. You just press a button, wait for a few minutes. You have a cluster with Hortonworks certified Azure bits on Azure, and then you can just start using submitting your jobs. So HD Insight is a Hadoop and Spark as a service on Azure. Like I mentioned, it's fully managed. We take care of everything for you. You just come and submit your jobs. It's 100% open source Hortonworks. If you are using Hortonworks, it's very easy to migrate over. If you're using any other Hadoop provider, your job should just work, as long as it's the same technologies we have in our stack. While we also contribute back to open source, we've done a lot of work on Hive and contributed back. And we also, in addition to open source, we also make sure our tools are working with open source. One of the key things we did is when HD Insight started, we used to run on Windows. But a lot of our customers said they prefer Linux because a lot of Hadoop tools are natively available on Linux. So now we've pivoted, and now we prefer that you use HD Insight on Linux, and that's like our preferred platform. So that's an example of how open source friendly we are. Clusters are up and running in minutes. Once you hit create, it takes about 15 to 20 minutes for the cluster to start. It's supported by Microsoft with industry's best SLA. So all the Azure SLAs you get are also on HD Insight. We also have a great support partnership with Hortonworks. So if you open a ticket, you'll only open with us, not with Hortonworks. And if it's something we can't fix, we work with them to fix it. So you get support indirectly from both companies. Familiar BI tools for analysis. We have an ODBC driver, which we actually work with Simba. Simba is a company which builds ODBC driver for almost every other big data technology out there, AWS, Google, you name it. So they're industry leaders for ODBC, and we also have our ODBC driver with them. So if you use our ODBC driver, you can use any BI tool. In fact, I'm going to show you Tableau demo today. We also have integration with Visual Studio, IntelliJ, Eclipse, and also notebooks like Zeppelin and Jupyter. And finally, through independent studies, it has been shown that the total cost of ownership for Hadoop on the cloud is much lower than on-prem. So this is the reason why you should be using HD Insight. So now let's talk a little bit about what you get when you deploy HD Insight. So when you traditionally deploy Hadoop, you get bits which have many things together. So you get a package of a bunch of different technologies, right? The way HD Insight works is what we discovered is when our customers come to us, they don't want the entire package. They want a particular piece of that package. Like for example, you might want to do ETL, so you might choose Hadoop. You might want to do NoSQL, so you might come for HBase. So what's the point of getting you the whole package? Because those are just extra resources that are being used in the system. So HD Insight is different than vanilla Hadoop because you come in and you say, which of these cluster types do you want, right? And we give you one of these cluster types optimized for that particular workload, right? So that's one advantage of this. One of the questions we often get asked is, what if I want to use two? You can always create two clusters of different types, hook them up with the same storage account and Metastore account, which are both persistent, and then it's like a giant cluster. Like they can share the same table names, they can share the same data. So anything that happens here, you'll see here in the other cluster. So it's pretty easy to make them work with each other, but the key point here is when you get a cluster of a particular type, we actually give you, it's fully optimized because the default configurations apply to an individual component here. So here's high level, here's the architecture that it looks like from bottoms up. At the bottommost layer, we have HDFS storage, which can be persistent cloud storage. It can be either Azure Blob storage or it can be Azure Data Lake storage. I won't have time to talk about ADL store, but there are a lot of presentations on that. So if you're interested, you should go look it up. Azure Data Lake Store is very high throughput storage for analytic solutions like HD Insight and Azure Data Lake Analytics and other solutions. So this is another difference from if you're coming from on-prem Hadoop. For on-prem vanilla Hadoop, the local disk is what's your HDFS. So what that means is if you create a cluster of 100 nodes, you get 100 nodes worth of data because the local disk of those 100 nodes is used for HDFS. In HD Insight, we actually split the compute and storage as two separate services. So the storage uses Azure Blob Store or Azure Data Lake Store, like I mentioned, and the compute uses the VMs. And you can scale one independent of other, which is great because one of the complaints we keep hearing from our customers who are using on-prem is, hey, I'm tired of scaling, adding more and more nodes just because I'm running out of disk space, right? So with this, you don't have that problem. You can still have like a 10-node cluster with, you know, and keep increasing your storage because they're two separate services. So at the lowermost layer, at our HDFS is Azure Cloud Storage. On top of that, we run the YARN operating system, which allows to run different Hadoop engines, which can be MapReduce, Thez, Spark, and real-time engines. And then we have different languages that run on top, like Java for MapReduce, SQL or Hive for Thez, Spark, which does a bunch of things, including interactive streaming, Storm, which is streaming, and HBase, which is NoSQL. Okay, any questions so far? Okay, go ahead. So the question is, can you switch on and off these different types? So again, when you pick, I'm going to show you this in a few minutes, but when you create a cluster, you pick one of these purple things on top, and you get the entire, you get that purple thing on top with the bottom, with the entire stack at the bottom, but only one purple thing. And again, if you want to create multiple purple things, you can, and they can still talk to each other. Go ahead. They are options. They're not. You can pick one or the other. Yes, that's right. So the question is Azure Storage and Azure Data Lake Store options, or you have to get both? You can just choose one. Go ahead. So the question is HBase. If you, how does it? Yep. That's right. That's right. The service is running at the compute on the VM layer. It just goes and fetches the data from the storage account. We can take it offline if you'd like more details on that. Yeah. Okay. So moving on, let's talk a little bit about Hive because we're going to use that a lot. What is Hive? Hive is SQL for big data. So Hive was actually introduced in 2005, 2006 by Facebook because when Hadoop first started, people were writing MapReduce jobs, and even like a simple word count MapReduce is like 100 lines of code. So only developers could use it. And since they wanted broad usage, they actually wrote Hive. So it's about 10 years old, but in 2010, this became an Apache level project. And that's when Hortonworks primarily, but other vendors together in the open source community have done a lot of work to make it, to add a lot of features. In 2012, ODBC was added. 2013, Thez, Vectorization, Orc was added. 2015, ACID was added for updates. And 2016, in-memory through LLAP was added. The key point here is it's becoming more and more like your data warehouse is what I want to show. And the goal, at least from Hortonworks and the open source community, is to make Hive pretty much like enterprise data warehouse ready. So that means it started with batch, moved towards interactive, moving more and more towards sub-second and ACID merge, and the goal is to finally get to cubes. That work is still, the OLAP cube work still, there's a lot of work to be done, but right now we are in this blue phase. Also, as of now, already there's a lot of work being done to make it SQL 2011 compliant, to add a cost-based optimizer, and to add security. There's actually a security session right after this on Hive and Hadoop. I think it's in the C building at 12:30, I believe, or 12:45, if you're interested. Okay, so with that, why don't we quickly look at an HD Insight cluster, how it looks. So if I go to my Azure portal, portal.azure.com, which is, I have to duplicate my screen. Okay, so Azure portal is the place where all my Azure services live, right? Anything I've created. So this is an example once I've logged into my Azure portal, and I can just do plus new intelligence and analytics. And it shows all the different apps, and I'm going to pick HD Insight. And here I can just start, you know, choosing a cluster. So I'm going to say Ignite Demo 093016. I can choose my cluster type. So like someone was asking, these are the different cluster types we support, Hadoop, HBase, Storm, and Spark, and we have some more in preview coming. But once you pick, let's say Hadoop, you can pick your operating system, Linux or Windows, the different HTTP versions right here. And you can pick standard or premium. So premium will add more features. Today we've added R server for HD Insight, which makes R, you can run it in a distributed, you can run R distributed using either MapReduce or Spark. So that's what premium is offering, but we'll keep adding more and more features. So once you hit standard, some more things you can do in this cluster are you can actually, so this is how we differentiate ourselves from like other on-prem, because there's a lot of work we've already put in. So another example is if you want to add ISVs or third-party apps, right, you have to individually go work with them and deploy it on your cluster. We've already partnered with the ones you know, that customers need or have asked, and we've put it here. So you just select this button, and it's installed on your cluster out of the box. You're still responsible for getting a license and paying them to use it, but at least as far as usage is concerned, it's pretty easy to use.
Where do you configure how many masters and slaves?
I'm coming to that, yeah. So here's where you just, if you want, you can pick an application, which I'm not going to do. The next thing you can do is you can just pick your username and password. And so I'm going to pick my SSH username and my admin username and my password. I have to select something, otherwise it won't let me proceed. And then I choose my data source. This is where I provide my cloud data store. Like I mentioned, Azure Data Lake Store or Azure Blob Store. And so in this case, I'm just going to choose the default one. So the question was, where can I select the nodes and the pricing? So here is where you can decide how many worker nodes you want, which can be single digit to like even thousands of nodes that you'd like. Obviously, you need to have capacity in your subscription. I don't, so I will stick with 4. And then you can pick your VM sizes. We have a bunch of VM sizes, you know, dozens. You can pick A, D, and G. G is coming. But right now, our biggest one is D14V2, which is 16 cores and 112 gigs of RAM. So you can choose whichever VM you want, for both separately for worker node and head node. And then you can hit select. So I'm not going to create this cluster, I just want to show you how this would work. A few other things you can do is you can add a virtual network to extend it from your on-prem. If you'd like, you can add an external Metastore. What is an external Metastore? Like I mentioned before, if you want to have a persistent Metastore account, you can add that. And so what this means is, if you delete your cluster and you come back a month to save costs, you come back a week later and you point it to the same storage account, you point it to the same Metastore, it's like your cluster never died. Like all the tables still stay alive. All the data is still there. So this is great. Again, all this becomes hard if you just try to run the cloud vendor bits by yourself, but you know, we made it super easy for you. So that's the external Metastore. You can choose script actions. Script actions are just like you know, when the cluster is being created, some special installation instructions. So some things that you want persistent, you can put it in script actions. You can add additional storage accounts if you'd like. And then and that's it. Then you just hit create, and it takes about 15 to 20 minutes to create it. So that's how an HD Insight cluster looks like. I already have one right here. And we can just look at this. Once it's created, you can actually just log in. This is how it looks once it's created. And this is the cluster URL. If I click on this, it's going to ask me for a username, password. I already entered it. But this takes me to Ambari. So for those of you who are coming from Hortonworks, this will look very familiar. From this point on, it's like your on-prem Ambari. You can add, configure, whatever you'd like. So that's how at least a cluster looks like. OK, any questions? Go ahead.
What if you want to point the data to the on-prem data? Is there any connection?
So for on-prem data, we have tools, Azure services, which will help you migrate your data on, from on-prem to the cloud.
Can you just keep the data on-prem
and still run the... I mean, I don't think you'd want to do that because the biggest bottleneck is reading and writing data. And if you do it over like the internet, that's 1 second security. You probably don't want that either. I haven't tried it, nobody's tried it, but I don't think you'd want to do that. Yeah. Good question. USQL and Data Lake Analytics, how does it relate to HD Insight? So we are the same team. I've worked in the same team for 4 years. Like I said, I was working on Data Lake Analytics. HD Insight and Data Lake Analytics are solving the same scenario, but they're two different technologies. HD Insight is more suited for open source technologies like Java developers and people who want to stay in the open source world. There's a big need for customers who would rather use .NET and C# tools for the same scenario, and USQL solves that model. And that's why underneath they can use the same store, but at a high level, those are the two differences. There's another difference that USQL is also, you don't even have to choose a cluster configuration. It's much easier to even use USQL, but again, our customers are like coming from the open source world prefer this model over that. Okay, so moving on, we've already talked about how to create an HD Insight cluster. Now let's talk about HD Insight scenarios. So the two scenarios that customers use HD Insight today are ETL and BI. There are other scenarios like machine learning and recommendation engines, but these are the two primary scenarios. What does ETL mean? ETL means you take data from a bunch of different sources, you clean it up, you transform it, and then you load it either to a SQL or a relational database where it can be used for by business analysts. So that was the primary use case for Hadoop. However, a lot of our customers also wanted BI scenarios. And by BI scenarios, what they wanted is since the data is already cooked and stored in HDFS in Hadoop, they wanted their data scientists to directly connect to Hadoop rather than the SQL. So those are the two scenarios, and they come with different challenges. So I just want to show you how at least they would interact, and then let's talk about the challenges. So typically, again, when you deploy a Hadoop cluster, you get what's in this gray box, right? At the most basic layer, you get a bunch of VMs, which run Yarn, right, which runs the execution engine on top. And I already showed you, you provide the cloud storage, right? You provide your storage account, and you provide the Metastore. If you don't provide the Metastore, we give you one by default. But this is what you get. Now, to talk to ETL clients or BI clients, we have two interfaces, Templeton and Hive Server 2. So ETL clients will use Templeton or WebHCat using like SDK or PowerShell, and BI clients talk using ODBC, Visual Studio, Hue, and Ambari. So different ways of interacting, right? But if you think about this, ETL and BI are very different behaviors, very different requirements. Why is that? Let's talk about that, right? When customers ask for ETL, the typical persona for an ETL Hadoop user is a developer, right? It's usually a development team which is using the cluster. Ideally, they'd like a dedicated cluster. They do not want anybody to run ad hoc jobs because they have strict SLAs that they're running their jobs in, and they want to make sure their jobs finish on time. Also, their job pattern is fire and forget. They want to program everything. There's no interactive tools they need. And their typical job is very large. It's full table scan, large joins, runs for like tens of minutes to hours. Typically, that's the scenario, right? So the problems that the customers face at this stage are, how can I run my jobs even faster? What tools can I do to just submit and forget? What file format should I use? And how do I make sure no one else is actually using my cluster? Now, on the other side, you have the ad hoc users, ad hoc cluster. And this is a shared cluster, right? Again, you'll have a bunch of data scientists, a bunch of business people who would want to connect and run ad hoc jobs. So these are very short running jobs. People are very impatient. They want answers quickly. On the ETL side, people are willing to, they don't care. They're just running in the background. And typical job is ad hoc. Now, before we continue, you can already see these are like two sort of kind of mutual exclusive. Again, if you're coming from on-prem, you had these two personas in your organization, you would have one cluster, and you would try to solve these two problems, and you would always run you know, clash into how to solve this, right? So a lot of our customers come to us, and one easy way of solving this in HD Insight is you create two clusters. Like I said, two parallel Hadoop clusters. One you give to your developers, one you give to your data scientists. They both use the same storage account, they both use the same Metastore. It's like one giant cluster, but you've segregated them. So that's one way of solving this problem. So those are the two main scenarios that our customers have. So we're going to talk about this now. How do you actually start writing a simple job to build this end-to-end? Okay, so as we get going, these are the different phases you need to work on, right, to start building this pipeline, right? You need to plan, you need to do some development, you need to do deployment, and then you finally need to make it connect with BI tools. So what is planning? In the planning stage, you'll have to decide what kind of cluster do you have, how do you, what deployment model will you have. In the development phase, you have to decide what tools to use, how do you author and debug your queries, how do you optimize them. In deployment phase, you want to make sure it's easy to just, so that it runs by itself and you don't have to like sit there and hit the, you know, keep having the job run. And finally, how do you connect with BI tools? I'm actually going to show you Tableau at the end. How do you connect Tableau with our HD Insight cluster? So in the planning phase, you need to look at cluster planning, right? So the first question you should ask is, what is your scenario, right? Is it ETL, is it BI? Because that changes a lot of questions, right? Who is your, next question is, what is the SLA, right? If it's an ETL job, are you looking at 1 hour, one day SLA? Because based on that, you can decide what SKU you want. I mean, everybody's trying to save costs, right, when you are choosing a cluster. So you want to save costs, and depending on your SLA, you can choose whether you want a bigger SKU or a smaller SKU, how many nodes, scale up or scale out. You want to decide, and again, what is your budget? So there's a trade-off between budget and SLA, and you have to try different combinations. How often do they want the data, whoever your customer is, and who is the customer, right? So these are things you should understand before you dive in. Once you get all this, you pick a particular cluster type. Like, I would ask if your data size is 1 terabyte, and that's what you're trying to optimize for, I would maybe pick 24 node, 16 to 24 node cluster using like a D4, right? Just, I would try with that. If it's more than my cost and, you know, it's much, like my SLA is 1 hour, but this cluster can run it in half an hour, that means I can go with less nodes or less powerful machines. So you gotta pick something and keep trying. The next question you should ask is, what is the type of cluster? Is it a production cluster, dev cluster, or test clusters? Because they have different requirements. And then you should understand if it's an on-demand versus persistent cluster. I'm going to come to that in a minute. You should understand whether it's custom versus default Metastore, because like I said, a custom Metastore is the one which is persistent, and default is just something that goes away once the cluster is deleted. And you should think about the security model, right? Like, again, if it's an ETL cluster, probably just a couple of people need it, an admin password would be okay. But if it's a BI cluster, you need to have AAD integration. So again, if you're more interested in security, you should attend a session right after this in Building C. So these are questions you need to answer and build like your cluster, decide on a cluster. And when I kind of mentioned this before, I just want to bring it again. If depending on what of the two clusters, you can either have a cluster which is persistent and runs it 24/7. This is very close to, so I'm looking at the first column. This is very similar to your, on-prem. You don't have to worry about a lot of things, and you also have a lot of choices. But you're paying a premium for it, right? Because it's persistent, you're being charged 24/7 while the cluster is up. But you can choose local disk, just like on-prem. You have local disk. You can choose local disk, or you can choose our Azure cloud storage. You can, for job scheduling, you can use an open source tool called Uzi, right? But you can also use Azure Data Factory. I should put that, Uzi or Azure Data Factory. I have a demo for ADF in a few minutes. Your other choice is to use on-demand. What is on-demand? It just means you bring the cluster up, run it for a few hours or minutes. Once the job is done, you delete the cluster, right? So you're only paying in that case for the cluster as long as your cluster, like per job, as long as the job runs. It shouldn't say job, it should really still say cluster, but hopefully your cluster is only running for as long as your job is running. So in this case, you will have to configure a metadata store, which is the Azure SQL. You will have to your data will be persistent in the Azure Cloud Store, and you'll have to use Azure Data Factory. Why do you have to use Azure Data Factory to do job scheduling? Because UZI resides in the cluster. And when your cluster is not running, there is no UZI. So you'll have to use an external service called Azure Data Factory. And you also cannot use local storage, because once you delete your cluster, the disk size is gone. So these are the two deployment models that you have for persistent and on-demand cluster. Okay, so once we're done with our planning of cluster, we go to our query authoring. We use different tools to author queries. We have Ambari Views, Visual Studio, Command Line, and Beeline. Let's talk about each one of them. So Ambari Views is something that comes out of the box. It provides a graphical UX for authoring and debugging Hive queries. This is actually one of our recommended ways to do it, because you don't have to log in. You don't have to SSH into the cluster. Also, it provides it's graphical, and also it provides you a lot of debugging capabilities. So let's look at how to use Ambari Views. So I go back to my portal. This is my portal, and once I click on this, it'll open Ambari, right? So this is what we'll see. Right on top, there is an option here for drop down here for options, and I pick Hive Views. And once this opens, this is how it looks. It's like a query editor. It's like a web-based editor, and I can choose my database, so default. And it shows me all the tables I have here. So these are tables I've created before. Once you create an HD Insight cluster, Hive sample table comes default, so you can just start writing select star from Hive sample table, limit 10. So this is just like SQL, but I'm writing Hive query. What it does is it takes this and runs it underneath either as a MapReduce job or a Thes job and shows the output right here. So this is probably the easiest, right? You just log into the cluster and you can run your jobs right from the UX. It also provides a bunch of other features. You can look at you can do a visual explain of your job. Again, this job was very simple, so let me actually do select count star, how about that, from Hive sample table. And I run it. And so it's running the query, and it'll show some output here. So it's opening a test session. So every time you run a Hive job, it has to have a test session open to the server. And the test session is open for this is a timer that you configure. So this is, once it's open, every subsequent query runs very fast. So in this particular case, the first query took long, but then it gave me an answer of about 60,000. And now I can go actually do different things. I can actually look at the plan. I can look at, visualize it, do different things here, right? So this is more like if you want a Tableau kind of a thing or Power BI kind of thing, you can do that. So I can look at saved queries. So these are the queries that ran in the cluster. I can look at upload tables. So this is coming straight from Hortonworks. I can upload a table which will create a schema on top of it. So that's Ambari Views. We also have Visual Studio, and this is something that's only available in HD Insight. So how this would work is you just open Visual Studio, and the first thing is I log in with my Azure credentials. So as soon as I log in, it actually shows me all the different cluster types here, Azure services that I have subscription to. So you can see, I don't know if you guys can see, let me zoom in a little bit. So I can see HD Insight is one of them, Event Hub, DocumentDB. So in this particular case, I'm going to say File, New, Project. And I'm going to go to HD Insight and pick Hive Sample. And I hit OK. So what it does is it's opening up this Hive sample code, which is already there, which is a bunch of Hive queries. Again, if you look at it, it looks very similar to SQL, right? So on the top dropdown, if you noticed, it ran get HD Insight clusters call, and it's getting all the HD Insight clusters that I have subscription to. And I have a lot, sorry. So I'm going to pick the one that I want, which is Rishinji Batch. So this is the cluster that I want to submit this job to. So once I do this, I have a choice of either using ETL the Templeton interface, which is submit to Edge WebCat, or execute via Hive Server 2. This is the Hive Server 2 one. If you remember that architecture I showed, I had two interfaces, one for ETL, one for BI. That's what this is. So if I hit execute via Hive Server 2, this is actually now submitting the job to the server and will bring the, if I go back to Ambari, let's go back to Ambari real quick. And I'll see if this job is actually running. So I click on Yarn, quick links. So what I'm looking at, this is the job history page in my cluster, right? And it's showing me that this job is running right here. I can click on this application, click on the logs, and I can look at the different logs and what's running here. So, okay, so that's Visual Studio. So I can see it was executed successfully. It showed all the output I saw in the command line, it also shows here. So that's Visual Studio. And then two other ways to do it is I already showed you SSH, right? So I can SSH in and just run it right here. So like it times out again, so I have to exit out. So I can just type Hive here. So I've SSH'd into my cluster. And then I just type Hive, and then it gives me like a SQL prompt where I can just run show tables. So it's still initializing. So there you go, it initialized, I did show tables, and it shows me all the tables. And here I can do select count star from Hive sample table. And so it's going to run a query. To do that. So any questions on authoring or any other thing we covered so far? Okay. So there's another tool, Beeline, which I'm going to show you a demo of later, but Beeline is another tool you can use to write queries. Okay. So some tips on querying. Try to write queries from smaller pieces and use sampling. The great thing about Hadoop is it actually there are a lot of options to do sampling, so you don't have to read the entire file. Also, like I said, Hadoop is a little more suited for batch and is a little slower, so you don't want to run a job and wait for minutes or hours while you're developing. So use sampling. You should validate results at each stage and use views. So views are very similar to like SQL views. You don't have to use the entire table. Views is an abstraction over your table, and so you can use that to make your queries more with less data, and also your end customers don't have to see the entire table. Okay, so I already showed you how to look at queries in the Yarn UI. So let's talk about debugging. There are two main ways to look at how you can debug. So one is to look at the Yarn UI, which we looked at briefly, and the other one is Ambari Thaiz views. Yarn UI is the UI that's available on Ambari. If your job fails, you will go to Yarn UI and look at the logs to see why it failed. If your job takes too long, you probably want to go to Ambari Thaiz views to see what's going on, because your job is successful, but it just takes too long, so you have to go look at each individual task, see how many bytes were written or read, and then optimize. So how do you do that? So again, you go back to your cluster. This is my Yarn UI. I can just pick, let's pick this one, this job. I go click on the logs, and this is where it shows me all the details. So if this job had failed, I can actually figure out, read the error, why it failed, and do something about it. If you want to look at the Thaiz view, we go back to our views. If you remember, we go back to Ambari, click on, just like Hive view, we have a Thaiz view there. So I will click on Thaiz view, and you can pick any query you submitted will show up here. So for example, I just ran select count star from Hive sample table. You can click that here. And it'll give you more advanced stats on each of the tasks that this query ran. So, for example, if you have a data SKU, you can go here and see which task is taking the longest. You can see why it's taking the longest. If it's reading too much data, that's a problem. That's a sign. So you can scroll down here and figure that out. So those are the two ways you can do query debugging. Okay, any questions on this? Okay, one of the pro tips the most common error that people have when they get started and get very frustrated with is out of memory. That's because customers, usually people when they just start, they're not able to have enough parallelism. And so the main one they get is out of memory. So we actually wrote a whole blog post about it, which is one of the most read documents from our, so if you ever face this, just go read that, just search for Hive out of memory and you'll figure it out. But the key thing to remember is you need to increase your container size if you do get this error, and disable map join. So you can read it more there. I actually also talked about in another session earlier this week at another conference. If you just search, if you just go to Channel 9 and search for our optimizations, Hive optimizations, you can see that in more details. So last year, so the next thing you've done is you've authored a query, you've debugged it, works great, you want to optimize it. Last year at Ignite, at the same session, I gave a 1-hour talk on how to optimize your queries. I brought it down from 90 minutes to 2 minutes. I'm not going to repeat that, but it's really, there are a lot of optimizations possible. Like I said, just go to Channel 9, search for Hive optimizations. You'll see a couple of videos to do that. But optimizing is your next step, right? Some of the main optimizations we did talk about were scaling up and scaling out, which is dependent. You can choose from dozens of VMs to scale up. The second one is always use the Tez execution engine, which is the default now. The third one is use partitions. This is very similar to like your SQL partitions. So instead of reading your entire file, try to create partitions so that there's subsequent queries have less data to be read. Use ORC format, which is the columnar format supported by Hive. So every time you read a CSV, you do some processing, convert it to an ORC. So subsequent queries will run very, very fast. And finally, use vectorization, which enables Hive to run process many rows together. So this was 1-hour talk last year, which I've talked in 2 minutes. But if you want more of this, please go look at that. But each of these are important as you build your pipeline. OK, so we decided on a cluster. We wrote our query, made it optimal, fixed all the errors. The next step is to actually go build a productionalize it, right? So how do you make it such that it just runs automatically? So HDInsight is part of actually a suite of products we have called the Cortana Intelligence Suite. What is Cortana Intelligence Suite? When we released our Azure services, we realized customers don't just use one service, they actually use a bunch of services together. And they all try to say, at a high level, solve the similar problem where they try to ingest data, they try to store it somewhere, then they use one of the engines, machine learning analytics engines, and then they either do some intelligence on it or run visualizations, right? So instead of you actually picking one and reinventing the wheel, we decided to just have like one whole suite and have these services work with each other. So HDInsight is right here as part of the machine learning and analytics. And Data Lake Store is right here, which is most likely where you would store your data. So the way to productionalize why I'm showing you this is a very common problem, which is used not just for HDInsight, but across all Azure services. We have a service called Azure Data Factory. So an Azure Data Factory can read the data sources. So let's go to the next slide. I actually have it here. So if you have raw data that you need ETL and then you need visualized, what you'll do is you'll just have ADF, read the raw data, run HDInsight on it, put it in the unstructured. So you'll first clean the data, then you'll use HDInsight again to cook it, write it as structured data, and then you can either migrate it to SQL DW or you can actually hook up Power BI directly with HDInsight. The key thing here, what I want to say is you can automate all of this using Azure Data Factory, where you'll ask Azure Data Factory to read the raw data, to start a HDInsight job, which will read it, read the unstructured data, write the structured data back, and then it can even move it to SQL. So how does ADF do it? So you tell Azure Data Factory to orchestrate, monitor, and schedule your jobs. It's just a single pane of glass. On one dashboard, you can do all of it. So let's see how we do it. So again, I go back to my Azure portal, which is the place I go for every Azure service. And I see that I have a data factory running here, right here, Rishimji ETL pipeline. I've already created this, but you can just do plus new data factory, and you can create one there. The first thing you do is click on author and deploy. Okay, once I do author and deploy, this is the format I get. So if you just, before we even do this, logically, what do you think you need to do? You need to tell Azure Data Factory, here is my storage account, here is my HD Insight account, here is my input table that you need to read, here is my output table you need to write, here is the Hive query you need to run, and here is how often you need to run. Right? These are the pieces any scheduling thing would need. So you just do that in the same format. So what you do is, first thing you do is you link a service. The only two services we are using is HD Insight and our storage account. So when I click on HD Insight, I can just give it the option of which cluster I want and what my username and credentials are, right? And then I have a storage account, and I also give it my storage account name and the credentials. So now at this point, I've defined my storage account, I've defined my HD Insight cluster. What I need to define is what the input table, which is unstructured, and what the output table, which is structured, should look like. So I have input data. Here is where I'm defining the schema. So in this particular case, it's a table. We can actually look. So why don't we look where this file is? So I actually provided the location. This file is in my storage account. Let's go look at that. I'm using a tool called Cloud Explorer. This is a third-party tool. It's like File Explorer for Azure, right? So I am going to my Rashimji storage, which is this storage account. Under that, I have the Rashimji Hive batch container, which is right here. And I'm going to go to HDI samples, sensor sample data, building, and building.csv. So this is the CSV file that I have. It's very simple, 21 lines of data, but I just wanted to show you something simple. So this is the schema I've defined, right? I've said that it has five columns, and that's what I told ADF. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then I have a query which just does an average of one of the columns. So my output is actually just one column. And I also tell it to run it every hour, every minute, and I'm defining it to run every 15 minutes. Right? So I've defined my input and my output. The next thing I need to do is I need to just tell it to run it every 15 minutes. So the way to do it, again, I need to first tell it where the query is, where is the Hive query, which is actually reading this input and creating this output. So just going back, it's under HDI samples, Hive scripts, HWAG. This is my query, very simple. This is the same Hive query, like what I showed you. I'm creating an external table pointing to the input, and then I'm creating the average, and then I'm writing it to the output, right? So I've told ADF, that's the query it needs to run. I've also told it needs to run it every 15 minutes. And then when I deploy it, it does its magic. So let me show you actually in the cluster. Here is the cluster where it's running. If I click on the Yarn UI, which is again the job history, you can see this has been running every 15 minutes. It ran at 11:30. Before that, it ran at 11:15. Before that, it ran at 11 o'clock and so on and so forth. So I don't do anything. I just wrote the ADF, gave the query, and now it's running every 15 minutes. Okay, so that was pipeline. Any questions on so far whatever we've covered? Sorry? Yes, I didn't see you, sorry. So this is SSIS for the cloud services. That's a good question. So the question was, what is the difference in this and SSIS? Any other questions? Okay. So now, where are we? We've done our cluster planning, we've built the query, we've automated it. Now everything's good, we have an ETL pipeline. Now what we want to do is we want to run interactive queries on this, right? Which I think is the hardest part. So let's do this. I want to run a 100 gigabyte query. I have a table with 100 GB, and I want to run it in this Hadoop cluster, right? So let's do that. Before I do that, and I'm a data scientist, my choice of tool is usually either Tableau or, either Tableau or Excel, or maybe I will just go type in the command line. Before I actually hook up Tableau, though, let's just make sure the performance is good enough before I tell my data scientist that you can go party. So before we, just one other thing. One of the things we talked about was the list of optimizations. So one optimization I did is I actually created an ORC file from a CSV file. So I'll explain what that is. So this is what I'm doing. I'm actually running a TPCH query, which if you know is a standard benchmarking query. So I didn't want to, so that's an easily available data set. So what I'm doing is I had a 100 GB CSV file, okay? Let's go look at that. So it makes more sense. So it's under the LLAP3 container in the same storage account. So under LLAP3, it's under TPCH 100 GB line item. So I had a 100 GB TPCH query. It's actually 78 gigs. I don't know if you can see that. This file is 78 gigs, right? I asked, as part of my ETL, I cleaned this file up, I made a structure over it, and I said compress it to ORC format so that it's columnar format. Remember I told you that was one of the optimizations. If that doesn't make sense, you need to go, you should go read up on ORC. But essentially, I created an ORC format file. So I went to the line item ORC, and it created an ORC. So what you see right now is what Hive created, a structured table. And the key thing here to see is it is 16 gigs. So it compressed my 70 gigs file to 16 gigs and defined a structure over it, right? So at this point of time, I have structured data where I can run queries on. So, so I'm going to go back to my prompt. And no, so as part of my Hive query, I need to say, read the CSV, convert it to ORC, and write to the disk as ORC. That's what I did. The engine's doing it, but I have to instruct it to do it. It doesn't do it automatically, is all I'm saying. You have to write a query to do it. Okay, so then I'm going to run this query. Now it's running this query on 100 gigs of data, but it's compressed to 16 gigs, right? What it's doing is it's opening a test session. Every query, like I said, needs to run on a test session. It takes a while to open the session, but once it's open, it stays open for a few minutes, and you can configure that. It's created 205 mappers and a bunch of reducers. Why 205 mappers? If you go back to your line item ORC, it has 205 files. Did you see that? So it figured out, because it created the ORC, files itself, it's already done it in such a way that it knows how much a mapper should be able to read. So it's created 205 mappers. Each mapper is reading one of those input files, and it's running it. And this ran in about 45 seconds. Not bad. If you had run it on CSV, by the way, it would have taken like minutes. The reason I showed you an ORC is because this is a demo, and we can't wait here for minutes. But even 45 seconds is too long. If you go tell a data scientist that every query of yours will take 45 seconds, they will say, sorry, it's not usable. Can you please move this to SQL? And then that's more work on me. Right, so I'm not going to show you this with Tableau right away, but the key point I want to bring is CSV takes minutes for 100 gigs. Obviously, as your data size increases, it could take longer, but CSV can take minutes or can bring it down to seconds, but it's still not usable as a BI, right? So one of the key takeaways that we're just getting from our customers is while Hive is great, it's not great for interactivity. It's built for batch, it's not interactive, and moving data to relational is an additional step that they don't want to do. And that's also Spark has come along. I don't know if you guys know Spark, but Spark is in-memory. So a lot of our customers have asked for in-memory. So that's when we actually, Hortonworks came up with this new technology called LLAP, Live Long and Process from Star Trek. And that's when we decided, why don't we take this opportunity to define a new cluster type? And so yesterday, we announced this, and this is a brand new thing that I'm showing you, so I'm very proud of it. Our entire team worked long to get it, but we have a brand new cluster type now called Interactive Hive. So if today you go back to your portal, you will see a Hadoop cluster type, and you will see a brand new, in the dropdown, you will see Interactive Hive cluster type. What Interactive Hive has is it just has Hive component and none of the other Hadoop components, but this can actually store your data in memory. So it's much more faster, it's much more optimized. It's still in preview, so there are going to be a lot more optimizations that you will see. Yesterday was the first time it was launched. So, you know, there's a lot of work even we are doing to make it even better. But the key point here is now you can have your ETL clients connect to the Hadoop cluster. Remember, before these two boxes, it was one box, which they were connecting to. But now there are two boxes, right? So now one cluster can be the Hadoop cluster, which is good for your ETL clients. One can be for your interactive Hive for your BI clients. They both share the same Metastore. They both share the same storage account. So you create one table here, it'll show up on the other place, and vice versa, right? So it's still like a giant cluster, but with this, you can see a great improvement in performance. So now, this can be suited for more of your developers, so you don't have to worry about sharing your resources with your BI clients. That's right. But with HDP, you get all of this together in one package, is again what I'm saying. That's right, it's 3.5, HDP 3.5 is what we're using underneath. LLAP came as part of 3.5.
2.5.
Sorry, 2.5, that's called HD Insight 3.5. I always get those mixed. Thank you, Nishant. Any questions? Okay, so how does LLAP do this? LLAP is not an engine. LLAP just adds daemons which hold memory. So it still uses Thes underneath it. And when your queries run, they just use these daemons where the memory is stored, right? So LLAP is interactive querying through in-memory compute. It can be 10 to 25 times faster than Hive 1. It can allow multiple users to run queries simultaneously. So it provides enterprise-class security, and like I said, there's another session on security right after this. I already showed you how it can have separate capacity for ETL and EW. And integration with world-class BI tools. So, like I mentioned, it's a hybrid model which has daemons and containers, and this allows concurrent queries with multi-threaded execution to run with each other. So at this point, let's do a quick demo. Before I do a demo, I want to just show you, this is how the output looks. I don't know if you can read that in the back. When you run a query on LLAP, the first query takes, so brand new LLAP cluster, the first query takes long time because it's still running at Hive on Thes. But as it's running the query, it's caching the rows, the columns it touched, and putting it in the in its daemons, right, which is the in-memory. If you run the same query again, it'll be much faster because now it doesn't have to go to disk. It just uses the in-memory cache. So how do you know if it touched the memory or not? Like when you run the query, this is the output you can see, cache hit bytes. If cache hit bytes was zero, that means everything was from on disk. Otherwise, it should ideally, if it hits the cache, you can see that. So so I'm going to run the same query. Let's do this. Let's do a demo. I'm going to run the same query, which took 40 seconds on the batch cluster, and I'm going to run it on LLAP. So I already have the two sessions open. This is my batch cluster, and this is my interactive cluster. Before I do anything else, I'm going to do describe. Extended, so this was my query. It's actually running a reading from this table, right? Line item 100 GB org. So I want to just show that this is a fair demo and not fake. So I'm doing describe extended line item 100 GB org. And what it tells me is its location of the file is right here. So it's under LLAP 3. Let's go back to my Cloud Explorer. So it's under LLAP 3, TPCH 100 gigs, okay, line item org. So the same thing that I just showed you with 16 gigs. So although it's called 100 gigs, it's compressed that 100 gig file to about 16 gigs, right? This is what my batch clusters table is pointing to. And I'm going to do the same thing here. Describe extended line item. I forget the name of the table. 100 GB underscore org. Session died, I have to exit and open Beeline again. Okay. Yeah, I spelled it wrong, right? Thank you. OK. Okay, so it's pointing to the same location, TPCH 100 gigs line item underscore org, right? TPCH 100 gigs line item org. So they're both pointing to the same file. And so now let's run the query and let's see if it actually hit the cache or not. So this is the query which I ran. And there are a lot more optimizations you can still do, which I have not done. So anyways, I'll talk about those optimizations in a second. I thought it would run longer. So it took 9 seconds. So without, this is out of the box, by the way. That was 40 seconds, this is 9 seconds. So 4x improvement already. Like I said, and the reason for this improvement was, let's look at the cache hit. This actually read almost whatever this is, how many? 6 gigabytes, I think, from the cache. So six, because this just touched a few columns, all those columns were cached. So all the 6 gigabytes were in the cache, and that's why it's so fast. So there are more optimizations that we can do, and that's why it's great that we have these separate cluster types. Those optimizations are not done yet, but that's the next work in progress. But some optimizations we can do are reuse your containers. So again, if you have a Hadoop cluster, ideally, every job, once it starts, you go grab these containers, and that initialization takes a few seconds. Right? You do not want to do that in an ETL cluster, because if you say reuse containers, you're basically taking that resources away forever from your production jobs. But an interactive Hive cluster, you can do that because you care less about SLA per se, and you care more about speed, right? So that's one optimization you can do. You can also, if you remember, I showed you that the first test session takes a while to start up, a few seconds. And every second matters, right, when you're talking about 9 seconds. So you can actually have Hive cache that session forever too. Again, this is a presentation I gave earlier this week. If you want to learn more how to do that, just search on Channel 9 on how to do that. But you can see this is how easy Interactive Hive has made it much faster. There's still work to be done, but 9 seconds is much more usable than 40 seconds. Any question on this demo? Okay, so the next thing I'm gonna show you is how do you hook it up with Tableau. So we actually, like I said, have an ODBC driver. Once you install it, you will see it in your ODBC data source administrator. It's very easy once you have it there. All you need to do is provide your cluster name right here. Where it's a Rashim GLLAP, you provide your username and password, and that's it. From that point on, you can hit test, and if it's successful, you're good to go. So it already works for me. What I did in Tableau then, I just downloaded Tableau. Let me open a new instance so you can see what I did. And I can just click on more other databases, ODBC, and from the dropdown, I can pick Hive driver. It got this information from my ODBC administration, 64-bit data source administrator. I hit connect, and it's connecting. Tableau is now connecting to my cluster. Once it does connect, I can actually see right here. I can see, okay, let's give it a few seconds. It takes about 20 seconds to connect. I can answer any questions while all this is happening if you guys have any. Go ahead.
Where is the data stored when the result of the query that you ran?
The data is fetched back to the client, but you're asking where is the data cached? It's cached at the cluster. So on the in memory in the VMs, yes. So good question. That's again a question for the security. You should bring up in the next session. But to answer your question, that's in this particular case, there's not. But there's active work in progress for that. But Azure Data Lake Store, once it goes GA, will support it. And I believe even Azure Blob Store, it's either in preview or it's coming. I don't know. Maybe, do you know, Nishant? I think it's in preview. It's in preview, though, yeah. I'm not using that, though, but you can set it up. Yeah. Okay, so it took about 25 seconds to connect, but at this point of time, I can just pick my Hive database, and I can see the tables. All the tables I had will show up here, and then I'm not a Power Tableau user. I still do SQL, but you can, whatever you want to do, you can go crazy with it. But I'll just show you can connect the table, and then at least you'll believe it's real. Any other questions while this is happening?
Could you use Power BI?
I could have used Power BI. Again, this is a standard ODBC driver, should work with every standard ODBC supported BI tool. Okay, exact. I'll just search for the tables. And it's, at this point of time, it's sending a query to show the tables, and my table is right here. There are two tables it shows. Let's go back and see show tables. And I see there are two tables here, both of them, high sample table and line item, right? So anyways, you get the point. From this point on, I can just drag and drop here. I can bring the data, and I can run queries. Okay, moving on. I have about 10 minutes left, I think. So again, with this, we've seen how you built an ETL pipeline, you had an interactive cluster, you shared an same storage in Metastore, the ETL, you read CSV, converted it to Arc. On the other side, the interactive hive used the Arc to do in-memory caching. That's where we're at. The next challenge that customers have is, hey, how do you improve high availability? How do you improve scaling? And how do you scale both scaling to elastic scaling for the job and also scaling for users? And those are, again, things we're actively working on. And again, these are more platform questions, not really Hadoop questions, right? That's why I'm saying, even if you use on IaaS, these questions, these are things you'll have to build yourself on Azure. But we do it for you as part of HD Insight. So how HD Insight helps with scaling is, firstly, we do a lot of platform availability improvements. And I'm going to talk about what they are. We are able to scale during and after cluster creation, and we're able, there's an ability to create edge nodes. So in terms of HA improvements, Hadoop community already has HA support for a lot of things, like HDFS, high availability, job scheduling through resource manager, and job resiliency. So if a task fails, you don't have to run the entire job, only that particular task. So you get all these. In addition, we add further HA support for ensuring your job history stays consistent across head node failures, because we have two head nodes. If one head node dies, you want to make sure your job history shows up at the second one, because otherwise a lot of our customers' tools, they go in a weird state. Also, persistency for Ambari metrics is something we're working on. In terms of elastic scaling, like I said, we have dozens of VM types supported. We can scale to thousands of nodes. One of the key things here is you can actually scale up and down after creating a cluster. So if you want to cut costs and you do not want to delete your cluster for whatever reason, you can actually just reduce your cluster size and then when you're ready, scale it back up, right? So again, truly elastic scaling. And I already mentioned this before, but one of the powers of Cloud Hadoop is scaling storage and compute separately. So you can scale one without affecting the other and keeping your costs down. And finally, edge nodes. What are edge nodes? Why do we need it, and how do you deploy it? So far, when you deploy an HD Insight Linux cluster, you get root access, right? And the first thing you'll probably do is you can go install third-party tools, and you'll do that. So we quickly discovered that almost customers would go install tools, but they would all install it on the head node, which is actually very precious, because if your head node goes down, you know, or it goes in a funky state, that's bad for the entire system. So you don't want that. Also, the head node already is running a bunch of Hadoop services. So in a typical Hadoop deployment, there's something called as edge node, which is part of your cluster, but it's not running any of the Hadoop services, but it has all the Hadoop tools. So ideally, that's what you want. So today in HD Insight, you can deploy edge nodes when you are deploying a cluster in a programmatic fashion. And these just, so if you set it up, these just come out of the box, and there you can install third-party tools without affecting like your head nodes or worker nodes. So that's one part. We're also working on having multiple edge nodes and having scalability between them, so you can actually go round robin between your apps. So that's work in progress. Okay, so I think I'm almost out of, like, I have 5 minutes left, but I'm going to breeze through it. We also support third-party apps. I showed you this in the app section, but there are a bunch of apps we have already. We have Datamir, which allows you to do a query designing in Excel-like interface. We are also working with AtScale, which is an OLAP engine, and Cask, which is more like a scheduling. So I want to end this presentation by just showing you, we were just rated number one by Forrester for the big data amongst all the cloud vendors out there. Microsoft is on the top right, both for strategy and current offerings, right? So We're doing a lot of work in this area. As you know, we're doing with Azure Data Lake, which is also a big data technology, together with HD Insight. So both in open source and in Microsoft technologies, there's a lot of work, and it's been recognized by the industry. Okay. If you need more resources, you can go here. And that's all we have time for. If you could rate my session, that would help me, please. Thank you very much. Any questions, I can take it now.